if you think about some of the things that you can do to be more people first, it's actually very simple stuff. It's like, can you put transparent pricing on your website? Like, think about that. How many websites do you go to if you're a buyer of tech, and how many people don't have pricing on their website? It's crazy that in 2024, people still don't have pricing on their website.
I'm Jonathan Gandolf, and welcome to the Content Cocktail Hour, powered by The Juice. Our mission is to squeeze out the deepest secrets of B2B marketing professionals to help you push your brand to the forefront of the industry. Let's raise a glass.
I'm thrilled to be joined by Mark Killens and Nick Bennett, co-founders of TAC Go-To-Market here. So today we're going to be discussing all things people first go-to-market, as well as we're going to learn a little bit about their entrepreneurship journey, which I'm really excited to dig into. I'm big fans. I don't say this about all of our guests, I swear, I promise, but I really think these are two of the best B2B marketers that I get to follow along with and learn from. So I'm really excited to learn from them, and in their own words, I'm going to let you each introduce yourself, share a little bit about your background and a little bit about TAC before we jump into the meat of the conversation today. Mark, I'll let you lead the way.
Thank you, Jonathan. Very kind words. Good to be talking with you again. I've known The Juice for a long time. I think it probably goes back to 2019? Is that when you guys were founded?
2020.
Okay, it must be 2020 then. All right. So yeah, it's been awesome working with you and your team. Excited to be on the show with you and Nick. TAC, though, super simple to understand. We help businesses match their go-to-market to how people actually buy today. So we got a community, we got a media network, a lot of content. We also are a go-to-market firm. So we have this on-demand go-to-market model, helping businesses implement what we call people first go-to-market and actually match their go-to-market to how people buy. But that's TAC in 30 seconds.
I like it. Nick, tell us a little bit about your background and yourself.
Excited to be here as well. I've been in B2B tech for about 12 years now. Mostly early stage companies have done, you know, field marketing, ABM, customer marketing, events. And yeah, it's been an interesting journey. And then Mark and I, we actually worked together at our last company together. And then we started TAC, which it's crazy to think that it hasn't even been a year yet.
It's true. You know, I come from HubSpot. That's where I spent like half my career, is HubSpot. And we always said, like, you got to match how you market to how people buy. But I don't think matching just how you market these days is enough. It's the whole go-to-market between marketing, sales, how you service your customers, how you partner with your customers, how you think about product development. So it's truly like, how do you bring products to market? And how do you get those products into the right people's hands, if you will? And that's the whole idea now. So a lot of what TAC, some of what TAC, I should say, was inspired by is what I saw at HubSpot and what Nick saw at other companies were. It was from this marketing point of view, but now that's really, you know, has shifted at the end of the day, because the lines between marketing, sales, customer success, and just, you know, what a brand is from a B2B standpoint have become, you know, one and the same almost.
I love that. I have a lot of questions already. I'm so curious about it. And I can't believe it hasn't been a year already. What is your guys' year kind of anniversary, if I can use that word?
Yeah, I mean, it's technically August 2nd? I mean, we started the business officially in July, but we went full public in August. So now, to be fair, the community Club PF did start in April of 2023. That was kind of like Mark started that first and ran it for a couple of months, then I joined him on that journey. I mean, the media network came even later than that, but the firm, like the on-demand piece, launched in August.
Before I let my curiosity get us completely off track, which we'll save that for later because it will happen, this is the Content Cocktail Hour. We always like asking all of our guests, what are you enjoying drinking nowadays? Nick, I'll let you lead the way with this one.
So I feel like I'm a fairly simple guy. I like a gin and juice, some Bombay. Sapphire is always solid. Now, if I was going the alcoholic path, I drink a lot of coffee. I like good coffee, but I've also been into this weird story, but there's this little market in my town called Bombs. I was telling Mark this because we grabbed dinner a couple weeks ago, and they do all these like organic, like super like local places, and they had this watermelon juice. And I've never had watermelon, and it's cold-pressed watermelon juice, but it is phenomenal. And I've been into that recently, too.
I'm going to have to go try find some cold-pressed watermelon juice.
Yeah, I've never had that either. That's interesting. They can press anything these days, right? Nuts, juices, vegetables. I mean, I'll stop there.
The new iPad ad that's hot in the streets right now.
Yeah, a lot of people are pissed about that. Yeah, I mean, alcoholic tequila right now. You know, the season's for alcohol for me, right? You know, it's not red wine. You know, if you're doing wine, it's rosé. You know, hard liquors, tequila. We did Cinco de Mayo, where it just happened. You know, Corona or that other one, Modelo. Those are good. Non-alcoholic, I definitely like coffee. I just like to drink a lot of water. I mean, water is like what my go-to.
Good for you. I currently have a hot coffee mug on my desk, a cold coffee, iced coffee cup, and a water cup on my desk. So that's where I'm at. And I'm getting ready to go to Ireland for 4 days. So I've been testing Guinness, making sure I've got a good taste for Guinness, because they say it gets better the closer you get to Ireland. So I'm gonna find out as best I can.
I love Ireland.
Well, cool. Let's dig into People First. Mark, I'm going to start with you because I think maybe first just describing what People First is, you know, we're fortunate in what we call it, I think is also kind of the definition of it, but would love to hear you. You mentioned implementing earlier, and I think kind of tactically what People First looks like. I'd love to maybe hear that from your perspective to listeners who may be new to the People First approach.
Yeah, definitely. So There's two ways to kind of unpack this. One is the simple definition, which is it's a business strategy, you know, that helps you bring, you know, products to market that uses three components: storytelling, relationships, and partnerships to match that go-to-market motion to how people buy. It has three jobs: creating demand at the top of the funnel, helping you capture some of that demand in the middle of the funnel, and converting demand that is in the form of a customer into a really powerful advocate and champion, which, by the way, I think those are different things. Maybe we talk about that, but those are like the three jobs of what you need to do these days, right? You need to create, capture, convert demand. The way we think about it from a measurement standpoint, this is actually hot off the press because we've been thinking about, like, great, like, we have this model. There's like seven different growth motions within the model that you use to activate a people first approach and strategy. We built this funnel simply called the People First GTM funnel, because marketers and salespeople like to measure things in funnels, and funnels are very useful in that regard. So at the top of the funnel, when you think about creating demand, it's about how do you get subscribers? And I mean, you, Jonathan, you kind of know this from the juice, right? Like, you have a similar kind of model, if you will. So how do you get people to subscribe to your owned media? Newsletters, content, research, events. How do you get people to subscribe? And you might have multiple modalities of subscribers, but they're subscribers. The traditional sense, right? You know, 20 years ago, from a digital inbound marketing standpoint, the most common subscriber is email or blog. But now it's been diversified a bit. In the middle of the funnel, you have, when you think about capturing demand, this is definitely very people first, but it's this idea of becoming a member, joining as a member. So you have subscribers, you have members. Between the subscriber to the member, the traditional measurement device is lead. You have a lead, you have a qualified lead, whatever, right? But like, you still have that. But like, now it's like, how do you turn a subscriber into a member? How do you create qualified subscribers, which we could talk more about? How do you create qualified members? But the member is about, how do you create an owned community where these people are having conversations, meeting one another, and networking, right? And that could happen online, in person, once a year, a couple times a year. Probably needs to happen more than once a year, but, you know, on a somewhat regular basis, how are you bringing people together? And that could be a free type of community experience. It could be free and paid. If you're a business listening to this, I think most businesses would want to start with a free community. And it's really, again, a way to capture demand, capture the buyers that are really interested in learning more, talking to other buyers and customers in this own community. And then the third step is becoming a customer. You know, create a demand, you've captured this demand, you know, from a subscriber to a member, you've now converted a customer. And then it's like, how do I convert this customer into an advocate, a champion of not just the brand, but the product? And you do that through your product, services, and programs, if you will, right? So that's how you measure the new funnel. Sure, there's still leads, opportunities, et cetera, that stuff. Company-centric status stages, right? Or like lead status stages, whatever you want to call it, like, you know, that you have to define. But from a person standpoint, the idea of like what you do in your everyday life, you subscribe to things, you become a member of things, you become a customer of things, and it's facilitating those conversations, that storytelling, those relationship building pieces, and the partnering that happens across and throughout that funnel.
That's fascinating. Nick, I'm interested from your perspective, because you had built kind of a community, maybe not like real defined, but you had this big following kind of even prior to TAC, and maybe we're leading into how you guys all started TAC, but was that kind of community and activating your own community part of what drew you to starting this People First movement?
I think it was definitely part of it. I think like people define community as like a lot of different things, and like community can be, again, like it's your audience ultimately. And like that can be on LinkedIn, it can be on X or Twitter, whatever you call it. It could be on Reddit, like figure out where your tribe hangs out. And like that can technically be your community. And ultimately, like you're building offline relationships with those people that possibly turn into friends, possibly turn into business, you know, possibly turns into partnerships. I think that was a big piece of between the two of us, between Mark and I, like we have a pretty decent following on LinkedIn. And I think that's contributed a lot to, you know, the success of TAC. And I mean, we haven't really had to do outbound. Fortunately, everything has been through referrals, word of mouth, or inbound so far. And I believe a big part of that is due to the community that you build and the audience that you build.
You create demand in places that you don't, you know, you don't own, right? Like that's marketing 101, right? No one's going to find you per se, unless something happens that draws them in, right? You got to do something, right? So when it comes to leverage, and the most important thing these days for a business is distribution. The distribution advantage and leverage you have is the number one thing that a business should be prioritizing right now. That is my personal opinion. I believe it as fact. Happy to debate that with you, Jonathan or Nick, like if you guys disagree, because like to me, that is the most important thing. So when it comes to what Nick was saying, we had some built-in distribution advantage and leverage through us creating a lot of demand through people following us and connecting with us on a couple of these rented community networks, social networks, LinkedIn, Twitter, maybe one or two more. Nick had a podcast or two. He started to turn some of those into subscribers, but neither of us though did a great job, really even did anything. I didn't do anything to turn that demand creation effort into something that we can have ownership of. And that's where the first test of this all became and started with building a minimal viable audience with Club PF. And again, that to me is more, it wasn't really subscribers. It was like, I was saying, hey, like, would you become a member of this owned community? So I even jumped the first part of that funnel. In reality, you could have just started with like a newsletter or something else. But that thing then proved out, hey, people want to learn about this. I feel like there is a sense of belonging around this idea around people first GTM. We're still figuring out things today, right? That funnel concept we just talked about, that came about just in the last month or so. But that's a beautiful thing around a people first approach. You build things with other people in a very public way, and that helps you do your marketing and sales in a more efficient way. But it's also just a natural halo effect that's going to give you when it comes to your marketing and sales.
So you mentioned building with other people, building in public, which I love, and the minimum viable audience. I've got maybe a perspective on this, but if you're a people first company, should you actually build a minimum viable audience before you build MVP or minimally viable product?
Because everything, it depends. I think for most, yes. It depends, again, it depends on like the product, the competitive space, like how the product is going to be brought to the market. Sometimes I would say no, like you want to keep it more secret. You want to have a really big lightning strike. You want to do these things, right? Like, but in most cases, I'd say yes.
Yeah, we sort of stumbled into that at The Juice. We were just doing kind of like validation research with other marketers, and we realized, oh, we had built this little like community, and then that became kind of a beta offering, and then that beta offering helped drive what we ended up building, and it was very iterative. I've never described it as the minimally viable audience before, and I really like that language, because I agree with you. It obviously depends, but I think now a lot of people are building community or building that audience and then building products for that audience. It's been interesting to see that flip over the last couple of years. Maybe this is the last people first question I'll ask for. I'm fascinated to hear a little bit more about the entrepreneurship journey at TAC, but is people first more resource intensive than traditional go-to-market playbooks?
Honestly, I don't think it is. Like, if you think about some of the things that you can do to be more people first, it's actually very simple stuff. It's like, can you put transparent pricing on your website? Like, think about that. How many websites do you go to if you're a buyer of tech? And how many people don't have pricing on their website? It's crazy that in 2024, people still don't have pricing on their website. And you don't have to give me the exact pricing, but give me like, all right, starts at $8,000 a month. Give me at least so I know. Like, stuff like that is very like a simple fix that I guarantee you will probably increase conversions. It will opt people in or out. And then another thing is like, your marketing emails. Like, you would be surprised at how many people still send marketing emails from marketing@xyzcompany.com. Why can't it be from, you know, Jonathan? Like, when you send the emails for the juice, do you send it from, you know, Jonathan at whatever your email? I don't want to say email so people like send you emails, but like, put it so a real person sends the email and gets the email replies, because it goes from a transactional to more of a relationship building method. But there's a lot of simple things like that that aren't, you know, resource intensive, that are just quick, simple fixes that can get you on your path to being there.
I mean, video makes it really easy. If you asked this question 15 years ago, I'd be, yeah, it's hard. It's definitely harder. Video and the way the internet has shifted to be very social centric. No, I mean, it actually, people first is the way the gravity is pulling us, but companies are trying to fight it almost.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? Why do you think they're fighting it?
Status quo. Status quo is an extremely powerful and dangerous thing.
So what would you say to someone who is wanting to go people first, but maybe they're getting top-down pressure from their executive team or somebody who is used to status quo, who's used to running the playbook from 15 years ago? What's the way to kind of nudge the broader business or the broader team into a people first motion?
I mean, it's the classic crawl, walk, run test. I mean, the two examples with Nick, just, I mean, if you can't do the pricing thing, maybe you could do an isolated test. A, B, like, see the conversion rate of a pricing page with or without pricing, right? Or like, you know, there's a few different ways. That's probably not the perfect test, but there's that. But the email test is even easier. Do one email from a person and make it very conversational, like another email without from a person. The content's basically the same. You know, so you try to get as close as you can to an A-B test that's scientific and just look at the open rates and clicks and maybe even replies, right? Just something like that, right? So you got to figure out a few ways to test it. You know, you could do a podcast for 6 episodes as a test, right? And say, all right, well, our hypothesis is this experience is going to drive more engagement than what we've been doing with our social, which is a lot of text-based content. So we're going to test a lot of video-based content in our social, and we're going to use that as a podcast to kind of, you know, get it off the ground and get that thing going, right? So for a lot of people, it's just a matter of not even needing to ask for permission, just doing something that follows the people-first principles we've laid out inside of Club PF, and just use those as a way to see, like, there's one small thing I can do. Maybe it's with an ad. Instead of having the ad have like no people in it, or like no voice of the customer or no voice of someone, like change that and see if that changes the ad conversion.
Yeah, well, I was going to say as well, I used to, this was probably one of my first jobs in tech, but I worked for a company called Simplivity, and they were in the hyperconvergence space, which was completely new. Everyone was like so used to on-prem data solutions in like the IT world. And so people are like, so you're telling me I need to go from not being on-prem to going in the cloud to this new technology called hyperconvergence. And I think that's the same with everything. You have to add value through education of content, which I think is a big thing of like what we leverage LinkedIn for and YouTube and a lot of these other channels. Like, and even like our free version of Club PF, like we try to give, and maybe we're even giving away too much information, to be honest with you, but like we give away so much primers of what people first is, how to get started, all for free. Because if we can get people to believe that this is a movement that they want to be a part of, it opens them up to this entire ecosystem to working with us. And I think that's the same for anyone out there that's like, if it's a new niche, new concept, new idea, whatever, like you're going to have to lead with educational, value-based content through maybe rented channels, maybe owned channels, whatever, but you're going to have to rely heavy on that. And I think that's why, like, going back to like subscribers, I think that's why subscribers and building your audience is so huge.
Oh, and that's the difference between the old way of like what I taught at HubSpot for way too long, I guess, in this regard, and they still kind of teach it, but they're changing, I think. I was actually just poking around HubSpot's website the other day, like how many forms do they still have? The old way is get as many people as you can to fill out as many forms as you can. Like, no, that's gone. Get people to subscribe. Get people to become a member, get people to become a customer.
I love that. We coach our customers all the time. Give away what you know, which is like uncomfortable and new and I don't know. Yeah, just not the status quo. But that's consistently what performs well as we look at content across our platform that performs well. It's templates, it's toolkits, it's reports with data, and those things perform really well. And if you are trying to nudge your business into a people first motion, please go join Club PF. As Nick mentioned, they give away a lot of really high quality content, a lot of like actionable tactical content that we see repeatedly helping our content consumers out. So would seriously encourage you to do that. I'm gonna switch gears gears just a little bit. I'm curious, you guys mentioned you're about a year, almost a year into TAC. It might actually be right around a year as we're releasing this. I'm gonna ask each of you, what's one thing you wish you had done differently and one thing you'd recommend to anybody thinking about starting their own business that you would have done over again? Can't miss, would absolutely recommend that piece of advice. I don't know who wants to bat lead off on this one. Mark's nodding like he's got some ideas here. So maybe Mark, I'll toss it over to you.
I'll answer the first question, the second question first, and then kick it to Nick. He can decide which one he wants to answer first. For me, the second one's pretty easy. We already talked about, so I'll keep it very brief. Building that audience, right? And validating your idea and using that as a way to understand how you can create different positioning for a product that maybe already exists. Like, people could call us an agency. I personally hate that. I would say yes, in that regard, like if you like dropped down from space and you looked at us like, yeah, you guys are like an agency. We'd said no through our learning of building that MVA and studying the market and talking to people. We position ourselves as Uber for go-to-market leaders, and we've created an on-demand model of plugging the right people into a company based off of the destination that company needs to get to or wants to get to from their go-to-market, you know, challenges and problems. We did that through creating a community and creating and listening to the conversations to help us better understand how to best position ourselves. You know, if you think of TAC in three different things, that leg of the TAC stool, that part of the business is arguably the most important one for a few different reasons. And we've really, I think, nailed that positioning for the most part and has unlocked a lot of other things for us. So that MVA is, for me, like, I would do that again for sure.
For me, I think like lessons learned, because again, like I've never done this before. And, you know, fortunately, I think I made a LinkedIn post about this, but honestly, like, I don't know if I would ever be able to do this by myself. Like, I need someone to hold me accountable somewhat. And like, I think Mark does a fantastic job. And I think we complement each other really, really well. But like, I feel like it's hard if you do this by yourself. And I feel like we would never be able to scale to like what we've been able to do that way. I think that's one of the lessons learned. But also, it's like, from a pipeline perspective, like, the economy of how terrible it is today, like, realize that like, stuff is going to keep on pushing. People are going to ghost you. I get somewhat uncomfortable pushing people to sell. Mark does a fantastic job. He actually likes confrontation. Like, I am the complete opposite, which is really good. Not that I don't get nervous, but I'm just like, I feel awkward. Be like, hey, yo, can you sign the $60,000 contract by the end of the week? So it's something that I know personally that I need to work on to be better as well. And I'm self-aware of that. Yeah, it's so interesting to me how some of those things, just like lessons learned, that you feel like you know these things in the back of your head, but like, do you really know them? How does it actually implement your business? Because if your like average deal window is like 30 days and that slips to like 65 days, how's that going to impact the business across the board? Which has been like some interesting lessons learned too.
I was gonna say, is it true you like confrontation?
I mean, I don't mind it. I'm not gonna seek out confrontation. Yeah. I don't think that's like, all right. But like, and confrontation is maybe, you know, it's too strong of a word. I like the negotiation. I like winning. So, you know, in sales, you have to like to win, right? You have to like to win and you have to like to negotiate so both people win. So I like helping people at the end of the day. So if I feel like I can sell them, I will do my best to never oversell someone, do my best to always underpromise, overdeliver. That's how Nick and I operate. You work with us, we're going to hopefully underpromise and overdeliver. Hold us accountable to that, by the way. I like the negotiation piece. Like, I like the art of, how do we figure out what someone needs? So like, we have a high qualification bar to that point, right? Like, we close about 50% of our pipeline, which is probably higher. Maybe that's average for agencies. I don't know. Again, like, I don't want to call ourselves an agency, but maybe that is the normal number. For a lot of SaaS businesses these days, it's like 20%. If you're good, 30%. If you're great, it's above 30%, right? Like, I guess you could say, depends on how you measure it, close versus win rate. But my point is, we definitely, you know, take the time to really understand the buyer, you know, not just qualify them on the standard stuff, but I'm a big believer in qualifying on psychographic fit, which, you know, if you Google what is the definition of psychographic? There's a few different things that go into that definition. Goals is one, motivations is one, alignment of belief is kind of one, but that's a big thing we qualify on. And that requires, yeah, some healthy discussions, debates, education, to Nick's point. My big learning, though, really quick, is around this idea of focus. And we're still trying to get better at this. unless you're like a really, really big company, you need to focus the sunlight of attention. There's like the attention sunlight. I want to, you know, when you focus sunlight with a magnifying glass, it creates heat, it creates energy, it creates fire. For small businesses, even like larger businesses, maybe a couple hundred people, you know, 20, 30 million, I still think you need to focus that sunlight into a few spots, right? There's one or two ways that you get people to subscribe. There's one place where people become a member. There's one or two core ways people become a customer, right? Versus trying to do a lot. You can do a lot of testing as you get bigger, but don't scale that out until you know that there's repeatability and you have a high degree of confidence. It's going to work over the long run. So some of it is like you have to not be focused to figure this out. So there is like this like chicken egg thing going on here. But for us right now, like we're trying to really focus in on like, how do we think about our funnel and how do we grow a good size audience? How do we get that audience to engage and become part of the movement in the community? And how do we then, you know, hopefully work with some of these people in a more strategic way when it comes to like tech, you know, GTM, the go-to-market side of things. So it's that fine balance and that dance is never done. You'll be always having a song to dance to, if that's the way you want to think about it. It's just like, what's the song of the month of the quarter?
Yeah, I love the analogy of like the sunlight, the magnifying glass and focusing on something, but also the acknowledgement that you kind of have to experiment with a lot of things to figure out what the one thing is that you should focus on. We talk about our team all the time, like we've been given a stack of chips, we're gonna spread those chips across bets, but as soon as we find the winning bet, like we're gonna move all of our chips to that bet and go kind of all in on that one thing. So that's a really spot on analogy. A lesson learned for us as well, I would say. Okay, if people want to learn more about People First, Club PF, Attack, the two of you, what's the best way to get in touch or to learn more?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I put out a weekly newsletter, peoplefirstgtm.com. It's pretty beefy now. I've rebranded it, but it's growing really quickly. So if you want to learn more there, if you want to jump into Club PF, clubpeoplefirst.com. And so we have a free version, test it out, see if you think, or, you know, no risk, jump into the paid version. It's $19 a month or $169 for the year, which is very reasonable for how much content value you get out of that. And then you can find me on LinkedIn as well. That's where I spend a majority of my time creating content, and YouTube as well.
That's well said. That's well said. Yeah, if you're listening and you want to get a special deal on Club PF, like message Nick or I on LinkedIn, we'll hook you up with a special deal for the first year. I feel like a lot is shifting right now in terms of B2B. Different industries are feeling different effects, but over time, everything is going to shift because the undeniable thing that I'm starting to pay a lot more attention to, and Jonathan, I think you even probably heard some of this maybe at Forrester, is the shift of who the buyer is from an age demographic standpoint. That is one thing I'm studying a lot more over the last couple of months, and I think that's going to lend itself really nicely into this people first approach.
You don't think the new generation wants to fill out forms and buy that way?
I don't think the new generation wants to do a lot of things like the baby boomer generation and then like kind of the lost generation. No offense to anyone who's in that generation between millennial and baby boomer. But like, you know, that generation exists. I think those two generations, you know, they're becoming less and less influential in 10 years, you know, and they're not going to be buying much at all, quite frankly, right? There'd be some left for sure, but there is a massive shift happening underneath our feet, and there's a ton of companies that need to change how they go to market, and they need to change how they go to market out of the gate, right? So that's a great thing about education and like marketing and more marketing, but definitely sales to some degree these days too, because those lines, like I said, are getting blurry. The amount of change that's happening, it's always going to be there. So, you know, to succeed, you have to always be saying, I'm never going to settle, which is one of our principles, never settle. And don't get sucked into the status quo. Don't let the status quo suck you in. That's what I stay paranoid about, right, at night. Oh, it's at a pipeline. I'm paranoid about pipeline, and I'm paranoid about getting sucked into the status quo.
Love that. Well, that movement that may be happening, I would place a bet that it is people first, and I think you all are playing a role in that movement. So Mark and Nick, thank you so much for joining the Content Cocktail Hour. We'll have all the links in the show notes. I'd encourage you to go check those out. Go check out their great content. Join the community. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time at the same time, same place. Cheers.
Thank you for joining the Content Cocktail Hour powered by The Juice. If you want to see more episodes or more resources curated for your role, join us on app.thejuicehq.com. See you next time. Same time, same place. Cheers.